following program, Normal Show Live, is intended for responsible adults only. We advocate for the repeal of marijuana prohibition for adults. We discuss the science, culture, and controversy about America's marijuana laws. We do not advocate or encourage any illegal activity and advise all listeners to learn their state and federal marijuana laws by visiting normal.org, N-O-R-M-L.org. Opinions and claims made by guests and advertisers of Normal Show Live are their own and do not necessarily reflect the philosophy and policies of Normal. Listener discretion is advised.
You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it. You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it.
And it goes down smooth. Hey!
Spanning the continent to bring you the truth about cannabis and marijuana law reform.
I smoke pot and I like it a lot.
From the promise of legalization.
And I think we need to rethink and decriminalize our marijuana laws.
To the agony of prohibition.
One major responsibility is to encourage people to use less drugs.
The National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws presents Normal Show Live, Marijuana Nation. Now, here's your host, Normal's Outreach Coordinator, Radical Russ Belville.
Good afternoon, tokers and tokettes. It is Monday, May 2nd, 2011, and it's got to be 420 somewhere in the world. And ding dong, the bin Laden is dead. That's right. We got news earlier today that Osama bin Laden had been killed in Pakistan by U.S. forces. Well, I'll tell you what, folks, that just goes to show you, if the United States spends millions and billions of dollars training you to fight them as the Mujahideen during the Reagan administration in Afghanistan, and then decades later you turn that experience and that training around to attack the United States, a decade later, we'll kill you. All right, so normally at this time we'd be introducing Ganja John. Unfortunately, Ganja John is at home today with Ganja wife. He tells me they're very, very sick. And so we're going to check in on him on the special hidden microphone we've got embedded in his eye. Ganja John and Ganja wife, how are you? Oh, doesn't look very sick to me. Chasing your wife around the room in a bikini, that hardly counts as sickness, John. We're going to have a talk when you get back here. But joining us for our virtual studio in beautiful Grastoria, Oregon, is the lovely Cannabis Carrie.
Hi, Russ.
How are you doing in Grastoria?
I'm doing great. It's spring has finally hit here on the North Coast, and we like to call that rainbow season.
I know. We had a hell of a day yesterday here in Portland. The sun was out. People were barbecuing and mowing lawns and washing cars. It definitely, spring has sprung. We're glad to hear it. Carrie brings us our hemp headlines here right after the first break. So, Carrie, what's in the news today?
Oh, well, today, the letter-writing campaign of the federal government to intimidate state governors continues. We're going to give you its latest victim. A well-known billionaire decides to make it personal and pass medical marijuana in his home state. And it's our kickoff today to Hemp History Week. So all that coming up on the May Day Monday edition of Normal Show Live's Hemp Headlines.
All right, all sorts of good stuff there. And also on today's show, it's Roots Monday. We turn things over to Cannabob, the host of the Viper Hour. He's got a new Viper Hour on tap tonight at 5 Pacific. He's also got our Roots Monday tune for us today, including a video. We'll bring that to you at 20 after. Also on today's show, and cross our fingers, we're still working on the connection, we're going to go out to Hawaii and speak with Pam Lichty of the Drug Policy Forum Hawaii to find out what is the latest on those bills that had been going through the Hawaii legislature to modify or amend their medical marijuana laws. Also, we've got time for a little bit of radical ranting. I'm going to give you a breakdown on the changes that are happening in the state of Montana thanks to that new SB 423 that the governor is going to allow to become law without his signature. All that and more coming up on Normal Show Live, the voice of the marijuana nation, and stay tuned all day long for the Normal Network. On today's lineup, you get the Viper Hour, Cultural Baggage, Century of Lies, John Doe Radio, and Cannabis Agenda Podcast.
You're listening to Normal Show Live, the voice of the marijuana nation.
In today's busy world, we're inundated by advertising for all types of pharmaceuticals that come with a laundry list of potential side effects. Shouldn't you have better medical choices? Natural alternatives to pills pushed by Big Pharma? At Alternative Medical Choices, you could choose natural, safe, and effective alternative therapies that are right for your budget without nasty side effects. Cannabis, or marijuana, has been a legal medicine in the Pacific Northwest since 1998. Our doctors will help determine your qualifications for a medical marijuana recommendation in Oregon, no matter where you live. Our massage therapists will ease your aches and stress with soothing hemp seed oil or cannabis-infused massage salves. We also offer acupuncture, Reiki, and other alternative health therapies. Call Alternative Medical Choices in Portland, Oregon at 503-288-5579 or visit our website at www.altmedchoices.com. We specialize in out-of-state recommendations. That's www.altmedchoices.com or call 503-288-5579.
The fact is today, people don't go to jail for possession of marijuana. I know you like to pretend it does, and there's a lot of misinformation about that. But finding somebody in jail or prison for a first-time nonviolent offender for possession of marijuana is like finding a unicorn. You find one, you will make a big story because it doesn't exist. Finding somebody in jail or prison for a first-time nonviolent offender for possession of marijuana is like finding a unicorn, finding a unicorn, finding a unicorn.
Narnell Show Live, the National Wildlife Refuge for Marijuana Unicorns.
I'm gonna light me a pipe of inspiration. I'm gonna blow away troubles on my head. I'm gonna leave this plastic place to your plastic evilries. And travel to a better place. And travel to a better place. And travel to a better place instead.
Medical marijuana, industrial hemp, consumer cannabis. It's time for this week's Normal News with Cannabis Carry.
The federal government's letter campaign of intimidation made its rounds most recently in Rhode Island last week, with the top federal prosecutor in Rhode Island warning Governor Lincoln Chafee that the state's plan to license medical marijuana dispensaries would be in violation of federal law. In a letter delivered to Governor Chafee on Friday, U.S. Attorney Peter Nerona said that federal prosecutors have the right to investigate and prosecute those who grow and distribute marijuana, even if such activities are allowed by state law. It was just last month we reported that the state had chosen three organizations that would be licensed to serve as state-regulated dispensaries for patients allowed to use medical marijuana. The regulations were appropriate, allowing for state inspections and other restrictions, such as patients only being allowed to designate one of the centers as their only authorized source of marijuana. The program was set to begin within months. The warning was enough to lead Governor Chafee this morning to announce that he has put a hold on the state's medical marijuana certificate of registration program. He said that the letter he received last week had clarified the U.S. Department of Justice's position on medical marijuana, saying in a news release earlier today, the Department of Justice previously indicated that it would not focus its limited resources on doctors and their sick patients who prescribe and use marijuana if such use was permitted by state law, noting that they said they wouldn't go after seriously ill individuals. But he added that the prosecutors could pursue civil and criminal penalties for dispensaries because the state's rules appear to permit large-scale marijuana cultivation and distribution. Rhode Island has allowed medical marijuana since 2006 and passed legislation in 2009 to allow nonprofit dispensaries where patients could obtain marijuana from a state-regulated environment. Senator Rhonda Perry, a Providence Democrat, who worked closely on the dispensary legislation, said that many lawmakers thought President Obama's administration would not target marijuana dispensaries as long as they followed state law. She said that she was bamboozled by Nerona's letter, and she said that they worked hard for a reasoned approach, calling the letter a complete reversal.
Oh, man. First, we get Governor Gregoire in Washington bowing to these threatening letters. Now we got Governor Chafee in Rhode Island just cowering before the threats of the U.S. attorneys. Is there not a governor in any of the 15 medical marijuana states who will show some leadership and challenge the federal government on this? The feds don't even acknowledge there is such a thing as medical marijuana. Governor Chafee, if you want to know the U.S. Department of Justice's position on medical marijuana, their position is possession of a single joint is a misdemeanor worth a year in jail. Possession of a single plant is a felony worth 5 years in jail. So merely by having a medical marijuana program, Governor Chafee. Your state is engaging in a conspiracy with hundreds of Rhode Islanders to break federal controlled substance laws. So don't give me this, oh, we're afraid that it breaks federal law. Everything we're doing in medical marijuana breaks federal law. It's not the medical marijuana patients the feds care about. It's the medical marijuana industry, right? So long as it's a husband tending a pot garden for his wife who's a patient, yeah, that's all fine. But if it's a businessman tending a pot forest for 500 patients, then the feds can't have it. Because, you know, those businessmen might build up loyal voting blocks and raise substantial money for lobbying and initiative campaigns and primary challengers. And they might show the public an example of what a well-run, tightly controlled, safe and clean distribution system for legal marijuana would be like. Next thing you know, people start to wonder, hey, why don't we just tax and regulate this for all the healthy people too? Raise a lot of money and save a lot of problems. When the feds are raiding these compassion centers, they don't even bother to arrest and charge anyone. No. If you did that, that would lead to a court trial. And then the government might have to explain to a judge and a jury and some news media why these drastic measures had to be taken just to shut down a place where cancer patients can get medicine. No. They're not going to take it to court. They're just going to bust down the doors, smash the cabinets, smash the displays, destroy the security cams, destroy the monitors, seize the computers, the cash, the records, and send everyone on their merry little way. It's just their way of shutting down competing businesses, businesses that are competing with Big Pharma, and it's an institutionalized thuggery that the mafia would be proud of.
And this one came to us straight from the Columbus Dispatch. Billionaire Peter Lewis is floating a proposal for an Ohio ballot issue to legalize medical marijuana in his state. Peter Lewis is a Clevelander and the head of Progressive Insurance, the nation's third largest insurer. He has been very generous with the cannabis community in the past, being the largest source of funds for the marijuana policy project, and he's given millions of his own dollars to support legislative efforts in other states. Through his attorney, he put out a request for proposals to pass an Ohio effort that would create a model for future campaigns in other states. Lewis is seeking a proposal to include drafting ballot language, qualifying for the ballot, building an organization, communicating with voters, and raising money. I just thought that this was interesting. Some big money being thrown into the medical marijuana ring there in Ohio. We will keep you posted.
Well, yeah, it'd be nice to see medical marijuana get passed in Ohio, but Mr. Lewis, Mr. Sperling, Mr. Soros, Mr. Zimmer, all you guys with the big money out there, I think you're not really understanding what's at stake here and how this needs to get passed. I think they look for these opportunities like, oh, here's a state where maybe we can pass medical marijuana. Let's all of a sudden throw some money at that and see what we can do. Ignoring that in order to pass progressive marijuana reform legislation, there needs to be a groundwork that is laid there. There needs to be an infrastructure in place, right? You can't just throw money at the problem. This is a problem of changing hearts and minds. There needs to be a coordinated nationwide strategy on getting media and getting commercials out and public service announcements, public speaking tours. We've got to get the general public educated on the benefits of medical marijuana and to learn that their government's been lying to them about the harms of marijuana. If we can just get the money for that and continue to build the changing of hearts and minds, building people's communities here to understand what marijuana is all about, then it becomes easier to change marijuana laws, not just in Ohio, but all over the United States. Quit being so short-sighted with this and just planning it one campaign at a time, and let's start looking at a nationwide strategy of changing hearts and minds and getting the education in front of the people that need it.
And today kicks off the beginning of the second annual Hemp History Week. It began just last year as a grassroots education campaign to renew support for American hemp farming, an agricultural product that is part of our American heritage and was banned in the mid-1990s. This year, thanks to the efforts of hemp activist groups along with the few lone hemp activists, there will be over 80 events and at least one in all 50 states to help raise awareness of the benefits of letting our farmers grow industrial hemp. For the second year in a row, Representative Ron Paul submitted an official congressional record statement in support of industrial hemp. Representative Ron Paul has said he also plans to circulate a letter this week to all his colleagues, calling on fellow members of Congress to let American farmers compete in the booming global hemp market. A leader in the fight to allow hemp farming is Eric Stinstra, the president of Vote Hemp. Vote Hemp is a national single-issue nonprofit organization that is dedicated to the free market for industrial hemp, low THC oilseed, and fiber variations of cannabis. They put all their efforts in changing current law to allow U.S. farmers to grow the crop. You can learn more about their organization, Hemp History Week, their efforts to help them, and you can also donate to them at votehemp.com. Stenz just said that celebrating America's rich history with the crop is building support for a federal policy change. He added, allowing American farmers to grow hemp will promote sustainable agriculture in the U.S. by supporting local farming, creating new jobs, and ultimately fueling the economy. We will be continuing the discussion on hemp and some of its many uses this week here on The Stash, but today I wanted to touch upon not its fibrous abilities that make hemp such an excellent crop, but on its long list of health and nutritional benefits. Hemp-enriched foods are one of the fastest-growing segments in the natural food industry right now. Hemp is a rich source of omega-3 and omega-6 essential fatty acids. It provides super omega stearidonic acids and gamma linolenic acids in a perfect, highly digestible protein and in the perfect 3-to-1 ratio that nutritionists hold dear. It holds naturally occurring vitamins and minerals like vitamin E and iron, and it is also a good source of dietary fiber. Hemp seed is a complete protein containing all 10 essential amino acids with no enzyme inhibitors. Hemp seeds are also gluten-free and can be raised in an ecologically sustainable way. Mankind has been consuming hemp seeds, or the nuts as they're often called, for centuries, and there is evidence in China of whole populations surviving off of hemp seeds in times of famine. Also in China, you can still buy roasted hemp seeds in many movie theaters. Hemp seed is particularly valuable to vegetarian and vegan populations to provide a complete protein. Unlike soy, hemp does not contain any phytic acid, an anti-nutrient found in many other beneficial food crops that prevents our bodies from absorbing minerals. You can add a handful of hemp seeds to a fruit smoothie, and it will give you the building blocks for strong, lustrous hair and healthy skin. And it's nature's highest botanical source of essential fatty acids, with more than flax or any other nut or seed oil. Hemp can be used and has been used for nutritional deficiencies brought on by tuberculosis and other nutrition-blocking autoimmune deficiencies. So beyond rope and fuel, eating the hemp nut or seed alone is a great reason to make its farming allowed and no longer banned by federal policy.
Yeah, of all the things in the war on drugs that shows you just how insane that it is, it's the banning of industrial hemp. The Drug Enforcement Administration is in charge of eradicating a plant which is not a drug. Hemp is below 1% THC. In fact, I think the United States, the test pledge here has our hemp products being below 0.3% THC, lest they, you know, trigger some sort of drug test or something like that, which they don't, by the way. So making hemp illegal is just insane. And in this time, in this economy, we need more jobs. We need green energy, green jobs. It's time to finally let our farmers go ahead and grow industrial hemp. I have one quick story to add here to the news. A police probe suspected arson at a Northern California pot co-op in SoCal, California. Santa Cruz County authorities are investigating a suspected arson at a medical marijuana cooperative after an early morning fire Saturday caused an estimated $50,000 in damages. Brianna Kovach, an owner of the Capitola Healing Association in Soquel, tells Santa Cruz Sentinel that security cameras captured footage of two young males using a hammer to break the co-op's front window and then throwing a Molotov cocktail inside, setting off the burglar alarms. We have from KTVU.com the video footage in question. We'll play that for you right now. We'll see if they get started. A little black and white overhead shot.
Comes in to see me. It's either a knee or a shoulder. I see the same injuries in weekend warriors.
Looks like we have an advertising, a little bit of advertising before it. I apologize for that. A lot of these web videos start with a little 15-second ad. The footage will be next.
Channel 2.
This dramatic video of the apparent firebombing of a medical marijuana club could be the key to finding the arsonist. Good evening. I'm Ken Wayne.
And hello again, everyone. I'm Heather Holmes. The Santa Cruz dispensary may have been closed, all the employees gone, but its electronic eyes were rolling. KTVU's Eric Rasmussen shows us now the incredible surveillance video of the firebomb attack as it happens. Eric.
It really is amazing. You know, the owners say they don't know who could have done this, but they definitely think they were targeted. This is right where somebody broke through a window, threw inside a Molotov cocktail, and like you said, it was all caught on video. A surveillance camera captured the moment two people firebombed the Capitola Healing Association in Santa Cruz early Saturday morning. In fact, two more cameras inside the business recorded crystal clear images of the lobby of this local marijuana dispensary going up in flames. in the moments before the attack, you can see these two people wearing hooded sweatshirts and bandanas over their faces look inside. Then one begins hammering at a glass door while the other lights a large Molotov cocktail and throws it inside.
I couldn't really, believe what I was seeing.
Owner Chris Morganelli and his partner were the first at the scene after getting a call from their alarm company. He says he used a garden hose to keep the fire from spreading into a second room where they keep much of the marijuana for this nonprofit business, like many others, still at the center of controversy.
Whether the suspects knew these cameras were here or not, they certainly seemed oblivious to them. And now the owners are hoping this sophisticated surveillance system will help track down the people responsible.
We just finished a remodel on this place. So we've dumped tons of money, and then just to see it go off in flames is just devastating.
Now, the owners of this place say they have about 1,000 patients. Some, in fact, even volunteered to help clean up the place today. A local group called CannabisHealers.org has already put up a $5,000 reward for information leading to an arrest. And it just so happens on Tuesday, Santa Cruz County supervisors will be voting on some new possible regulations for pot clubs, including where they can operate. We're live here in Santa Cruz. Eric Rasmussen, KTVU Channel 9.
Oh, sad news out of Santa Cruz area there, and we can only speculate as to who might have been responsible. Could it have been drug dealers or rival dispensary owners or just people that hate medical? Who knows?
It's 20 after the hour, and we have to take a short break, if you know what I mean. Please support these sponsors who support Normal Show Live.
Oh, have you ever met that funny reefer man? A reefer man. Have you ever met that funny reefer man? A reefer man. If he said he swam to China, he would send you South Carolina. Then you know you're talking to that reefer man.
As High Times Senior Cultivation Editor, I'm often called into the field and asked to sample or even identify exotic strains of marijuana in their natural habitat. Now, for the first time, I've compiled more than 120 of my favorite strains into this single field guide designed to fit into your pocket as you travel the world in search of your favorite plant. From a friend's closet grow room to the wilds of Northern California, this single guide covers all of today's best-known strains, plus heirlooms and throwbacks, including High Times quality photos and information on each variety's genetic heritage and growing characteristics, plus my personal notes on aroma, flavor, and potency. So this is Danny Danko, author of the official High Times Field Guide to Marijuana Strains, wishing you good times and great ganja.
The official High Times Field Guide to Marijuana Strains is available at hightimes.com and finer bookstores.
Don't touch that dial. We'll be right back after word from these 420 friendly sponsors. Wait a minute. This is internet radio. There are no dials here. It's time for your daily Toker Tunes, the best in 420-friendly music from all genres that uplifts, entertains, and informs the public. Today we bring you tunes for Roots Monday, our celebration of the music that evolved into the popular modern music of today. We pick the best of blues, country, folk, and jazz with a 420 feel and serve it up for you every Monday. Brought to you by Cannabis Carry in Astoria, Oregon, and CannabisFantastic.com. If you'd like to submit your song to be played on Normal Show Live, send it to us at stash@normal.org. Now here's some more great independent marijuana music for today's Daily Toker Tunes.
Hello, and welcome to the Roots Monday Toker Tune. I'm Cannabob, and I'm also your host of the Viper Hour, which premieres a new show every Monday at 5 p.m. Pacific Time and 8 p.m. Eastern Time, right here on the Normal Network. We play a lot of old jazz reefer music from the 1920s and 30s, so if you like that type of music, stop in and give us a listen. Today on the Roots Monday Toker Tune, we have a blues song by Mr. Morgan Davis. Morgan Davis grew up listening to a prolific mix of rhythm and blues. The music of Jimmy Reed, Ike and Tina Turner, Chuck Berry, and Fats Domino were in the air. He later moved to California with his family, and then in 1968, he left for Canada. While living in Toronto's Mecca for the subculture of the late 1960s, he immersed himself in the study of the Delta Blues, especially the music of Robert Johnson. For more on Morgan Davis, you can visit him at morgandavis.com. And today we're going to hear Morgan do one of his original tunes called Reefer Smokin' Man. So light up, sit back, and enjoy Morgan Davis on today's Roots Monday Toker Tune.
Reefer smoking man, I have been so all my life. I'm a reefer smoking man, I have been so all my life. You know I love my reefer much as I love my wife. And folks, I love my wife. Don't you tell me it's illegal, 'cause it's legal in my mind. I follow a higher law. Don't you tell me it's illegal, 'cause it's legal in my mind. You know it's good for the spirit. There's medicine you can find. But if you drank too much booze, you know you're bound to get sicker than a person who puffs, can smoke a whole lot of stuff and still be able to talk and not fall down any wall, just like a drunkard might do if he's had more than a few. Unlike the smoker of weed who won't go crazy and speed, I would never think of sharing a ride with a person who got liquor inside. Whereas I drive across this land with a reefer in my hand. Not to mention that a party with reefer always be nice and mellow. People sitting around feeling like bowls of jello. That's why I'm a reefer smoking man. Way back in 1965. Well, I'm a reefer smoking man. Sometime in the 60s. You know I credit marijuana for keeping this boy alive. Here comes now. Hey!
What?
Don't this evidence make sense? I'm asking you folks.
Yeah.
Don't this evidence make sense? Let me hear you say amen.
Yeah.
I know this evidence makes sense. We got such a believing crowd. You know, folks, here in North America, the two most prescribed drugs today are Prozac and Viagra. That's a sad statement on our society. You start smoking reefer, you fix your problem and put a smile on your face. I'm a reefer smoking man.
Blog by surfing to stash.normal.org and choosing media and then Toker Tunes from the main menu.
Starfish Designs, makers of the original Gandalf.
I'm Radical Russ, and when I want to relax, I always have my 17-inch long original Gandalf from Starfish Designs nearby. The hand-blown borosilicate glass is strong and easy to clean, and the design is sleek and sophisticated. Starfish Designs are available from Bend, Oregon at a glass retailer near you. For locations, call 541-788-GLASS. That's 541-788-4527.
I'm a doctor.
I'm a lawyer.
I'm a journalist.
I'm a student.
I'm a teacher.
I'm a representative.
I have cancer.
The outdated laws of prohibition are more dangerous than the plant itself.
I lost my scholarship.
I was fired.
20 million arrests since 1965.
This is getting ridiculous.
Our prisons are overcrowded with nonviolent offenders.
We have the opportunity to change.
This is costing our country billions of dollars.
Making my family and I fight in a courtroom is difficult enough when I'm already fighting through chemotherapy.
There's no reason to be scared by tradition anymore.
We can stop this.
We can stop this.
We are the American people.
We can stop this.
And you have our support.
We are old.
Young.
Straight.
Gay.
We're every race and nationality.
And we're not going to give up.
You can tax it.
You can regulate it.
Apply age restrictions.
You can create millions of new jobs.
We can save our economy.
President Obama?
It's time for legalization.
Legalization?
Yes.
We
can.
Are you supporting legalizing tax on marijuana use?
I think it's time for a debate.
Normal show live.
And I think that we ought to study very carefully on what other countries are doing that have legalized marijuana and other drugs.
Marijuana Nation.
I saw him hanging there afterwards, a celebration party after the Mr. Olympia smoking a joint. Did he really smoke a joint? And did he in fact inhale?
Saying I'm in need of a change. I'm in need of a change. See, I used to get high.
John said that you and him used to smoke weed together.
He was right.
He was right?
We always had a good time. We know how to enjoy ourselves.
Nothing to lose. Now I can't get high. Can't get high.
Come on, Cohagan. You got what you want. Give these people air.
Days come to pass and the nights tend to last much longer than they should.
I'll be back.
See, I used to get high. The end of the day, and I used to get high. That time's ticking away, and I used to get high. Nothing to lose, now I can't get high.
And now, can't get high. From the Shakespearean Theatre, I'm your host, Leonard Pimp-Garnell III. Tonight we take a look at one of the finest works in the cannabis cinema, 1996's Half-Baked, starring David Chappelle, as interpreted by the Royal Shakespearean Cannabis Theatre Company. In this scene, Chappelle's character, Thurgood Marshall, has just admitted his addiction to cannabis to a room full of narcotics addicts. One addict, played in the film by Robert Saget, and interpreted here by the Royal Company's Sir Frederick Farrakh, takes umbrage at the suggestion.
I find preposterous the notion that you, sir, may be addicted to cannabis. In times previous, I have undertaken lubricious endeavors, most revolting and unbecoming of a proper gentleman, in my servitude to the wicked powder of the coca leaf. Lo, that is an addiction whose chains would bind Hercules. At any point in history, could one identify a moment in your life so sullied by your ignominy as a cannabis slave? Methinks not! Boo this man!
For Cannabis Shakespearean Theater, I'm Leonard Pimp-Garnell III.
Legalization, decriminalization, lowest law enforcement priority, medical marijuana, ganja sacrament, consumer cannabis, industrial hemp. The world of marijuana law reform involves many different aspects of cannabis that interact nearly every public policy discussion in America, including healthcare, the economy, global climate change, law enforcement in prisons, immigration, religion, free speech, energy policy, and war. Now, we take a look at how re-legalizing marijuana will change the world in our normal show live, Cannabis Conversations.
All right, welcome back, everyone. We're going to go all the way across the Pacific, or at least halfway across the Pacific, and join Pam Lichty with the Drug Policy Forum of Hawaii. And we've been talking about various measures that have been on the ballot out there, or in the legislature out there. I think there was five of them that we were covering, and we're just going to get an update now and find out what's going on. So, Pam, welcome back to the show.
Hi, Russ. Thanks so much for having me.
Yes.
This will be a very quick report because essentially nothing passed. Our session is about to end, I believe, this Thursday. All the drama is pretty much over. And we came very close on a dispensary bill, a bill to set up. Originally it was a system of dispensaries across the state, and then it was whittled down to one with a pilot project of 2 to 5 years, and then they couldn't even reach agreement on that. So the upshot is it's been a very disappointing legislative session after a promising start.
Yeah, no kidding. Now, with this dispensary measure that failed, you know, we've been looking and telling the stories of in Washington State, you know, Spokane, Washington, they just got raided, and before
right.
that they received letters, and Lincoln Chafee in Rhode Island now is responding to these letters. Were there any U.S. attorney letters involved in the Hawaii situation?
As a matter of fact, there were. I mean, in my view, it's a concerted effort, probably coordinated effort across the country, this pushback that we're seeing. Yes, about 2 weeks ago, I guess, our U.S. attorney, Flo, what's Flo's last name? Nakatani, I'm sorry, I can't recall her last name. Anyway, a newly appointed U.S. attorney, she issued a similar letter saying, oh, it's still against federal law, and look out, and we have to be careful, and all this. But interestingly, we met with our governor, Neil Abercrombie, a couple of weeks ago, right after the letter was issued, and he's a very feisty sort, and he told us he didn't appreciate being threatened by the Fed, so if only other governors would feel the same way. Essentially, it didn't say anything new, in my view, a scare tactic.
Mm-hmm. And for so long, you've had problems getting these bills past the former governor, Governor Lingle. Now it's a problem in the legislature. Who are the people that we need to target in the legislature there in Hawaii that are becoming such a roadblock?
Yeah, well, actually, it's on the House side, all of the problems. In fact, we had five bills initially. They were various measures to improve the medical cannabis program that's been in place since 2000, and there was also a cannabis decrim bill. And all those bills sailed through the Senate. In fact, the decrim bill passed unanimously. Now, bear in mind, we have 24 Democrats and one Republican in the Senate. Nonetheless, some of them are quite conservative. Anyway, they came over to the House, and they came to a grinding halt, and the two villains in the piece were the chair of the House Health Committee and the chair of the House Public Safety Committee. And public safety is relevant because, unfortunately, our law is housed in the Public Safety mm-hmm. Narcotic Enforcement Division, which has been a problem from day one and remains a problem.
And that was one of the bills that died here, was to transfer that to the Department of Health, right?
Exactly, yeah. And then the Senate kept kind of putting that back into different measures, but the House wouldn't go for it. And we were also getting real resistance from the Department of Health, which was distinctly not helpful. They would say things like, well, it's not a neat fit, we don't know where to put it, and our response was, well, the other states have figured it out. It's in departments of health in most states that have registry systems, mm-hmm. except Vermont's the only other one where it's in law enforcement. So they figured it out. You guys can figure it out. And indeed, if the legislature told them they had to, they would figure it out.
What are the biggest problems then that remain unsolved because these bills were unable to get any traction?
Yeah, well, there's an issue of the caregivers. Right now we have a 1-to-1 patient-to-caregiver ratio, which is extremely restrictive and is really causing a lot of problems for patients who are unable to grow it for various reasons. Patients still are permitted to grow here. Another problem is the sheer amount that folks are permitted to have, and there's some ambiguity, 3 mature plants, 4 immature plants, and nobody really knows what that means. And for patients who are vaporizing or making their own edibles, of course, they need more of the plant material than if you're smoking it. So the legislature has been, having a hard time coming to grips with that. Another pressing issue is transportation. The language in the law is quite ambiguous, and patients have been stopped in their cars with cannabis and card, and sometimes the police let them go, and sometimes they arrest them, and it's totally arbitrary. Another problem, which is more complicated to solve, is because we're a state of islands, transporting it from island to island, by definition, you're flying. There is no commuter ferry. And so then you run into TSA. Now, TSA, as your listeners probably know, it's not part of their beat to do drugs. But what they do is, if they find something, they call the local police. Mm-hmm. And the reaction has varied from, oh, that's fine, I see you've got your card, be on your way, to arresting them and taking or taking the medicine away, or arresting them. I mean, anything. And what we'd like to see eventually is a policy in place, like I believe Oakland has and probably other airports around the country, to set some sort of uniformity and so that people know what to expect.
No, yeah, and such a special situation, like you said, in an island state like this, where you really don't have much choice if you want to get around. Pam,
The other thing is, Russ, that... I'm sorry. The other thing is that most of the sophisticated medical care is on the island of Oahu, Honolulu, and so a lot of patients with cancer or whatever have to travel to Oahu for chemotherapy or for their medical treatments. So there is a real necessity for them to travel often and to bring their medicine with them.
Absolutely. All right, we're speaking with Pam Lichty from the Drug Policy Forum of Hawaii and dpfhi.org. Did I remember that correctly? Is that the website?
You got it, right.
All right.
Okay. I'm afraid it's not terribly up to date, but we'll be putting something up there soon. There have been articles in the local paper and actually a very good editorial in the paper. The other villain, if I've got another minute,
the other villain
of the piece was Senator Josh Green, who was the head negotiator for the Senate side in the conference committee. Now, he is a senator from the Big Island, which is where half of the medical cannabis patients are. He also happens to be a medical doctor. And he's always spoken, pretty sincerely, we thought, about how he believes it's a good program and there's a legitimate need and he's seen patients benefit. But then at the very last minute, he started talking about the abuses of the system and how this was indicated by the number of young people who are registered and that they are registered for pain and how could there be so many young people who are in pain and so forth. And then he started talking about the abuses of the system and how we have to narrow down medical conditions so that we can eliminate some of the abuses. And he brought this up at the very last minute in the conference committee and took everybody by surprise. And so that was a real problem. And I still haven't really found out. All this just went down on Friday. So I still have to do a little more investigating and see what really happened behind the scenes and what stopped this thing in its tracks.
Yeah, and that's unfortunately, it's a theme that we're hearing resonate around the country in these other medical marijuana states, this idea that somehow there's abuse because young people may be registering. And my response is always, who are the people that have the hard work jobs out there, the construction jobs, the laboring jobs?
Exactly. And beyond that, it's a matter, the physicians are the gatekeepers, and I think that's totally appropriate. And if they feel they're not giving sufficient scrutiny, well, then, talk to them about it. But essentially, they were hassling us advocates and saying, these abuses are unconscionable. How can you support them? Our answer is we're not supporting them, but, we're not the policymakers. You guys figure it out. I want to say one other thing. I kind of indicated at the beginning when this this dispensary bill first started, there was going to be at least one on each island, which, again, makes total sense for our geographic situation. And by the time it limped to the finish line, it was one dispensary in one location on one island with a stipulation that you couldn't carry it off island. And it would be a pilot program for two years at least, which means a year to get it up and running, 2 years to wait and see how the pilot goes before you can. So it's a delaying tactic. And so by the end of the session, we weren't sure we even wanted this thing to survive, frankly. And we were kind of polling the patients and, what should we do? Well, they took it out of our hands by, not coming to agreement. But, there was an issue of whether we would even want the governor to sign it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, unfortunately, that's what we see happen so many times in these bills. We had the Washington State bill that had some pretty good provisions.
Right.
They got struck, and then you're left with, not what you intended in the first place. It's so sad sometimes. Pam, am I mistaken in understanding, is Hawaii not a citizen initiative state? Do you have that power there?
Yeah, unfortunately, we are not. We have a county-by-county initiative process, and that isn't used very much, but it was used a couple of years ago on the Big Island, and they actually passed the lowest arrest priority for marijuana, allowing people to have up to 24 plants. However, the local police have been just totally ignoring it. So there's a kind of a suit, a potential suit there, except that the wording was kind of vague and, they suggested that it was their lowest arrest priority, so I don't know what's going to happen there. But no, unfortunately, fortunately or unfortunately, we have no statewide initiatives, so we're reliant on our legislature.
Yeah, having to rely on the legislature. Well, let's get some pressure on them. My intern, Kaliko, here has family out there in Hawaii and friends on, so let's tell him and everyone else listening who they contact, what they need to do next to get this, get the ball rolling for the next session.
Well, that's a really good question. I guess, we're still really kind of licking our wounds and trying to figure it out. I don't think there's any point at the moment in talking to individual legislators. They could certainly write to our governor and tell him that they were disappointed to see what happened, and they hope that Hawaii will improve this in the near future, and especially moving into the Department of Health. And other than that, Russ, I'm going to have to get back to you when we have our ducks in a row a little bit more, because we're still trying to figure out next moves.
Yeah, it just happened this last week. Well, everyone check out Drug Policy Forum of Hawaii, dpfhi.org. When they have new information, it will be there. And Pam, when you get something new to tell us, give us a call and we'll let everyone know.
I sure will, Russ. Thanks so much for the opportunity.
Oh, you're welcome. Thank you. All right, folks, when we come back, we're going to have a little bit of radical ranting. We'll talk about another state where medical marijuana has been severely curtailed. It's my look at SB 423 in Montana when we return.
The Normal PAC, the political arm of Normal, makes contributions to members of Congress and select state legislators who support our policies and advance legislation towards that end. Elected officials need to see that those of us who support legalization are serious about changing policy, are about more than just getting high, and understand the importance of supporting politicians who support us. Please make a contribution today to the Normal PAC and send it to the Normal Office in Washington, D.C., 1600 K Street Northwest, Suite 501, Washington, D.C., 20006. Or go to the Normal website and make a generous contribution. It is an investment in our future and will help assure we finally re-legalize the responsible use of marijuana in this country. Thank you.
Hello, this is Webb Hubble. Life insurance is now available for responsible marijuana smokers. For years, responsible marijuana smokers have not been able to access affordable life insurance products. Normal uniquely supports cannabis consumers. Two carriers have already agreed to offer all of their traditional life insurance products at all levels without excluding individuals who smoke marijuana responsibly. Help Normal and help yourself. If you've been declined for life insurance, are paying above market premiums, or simply want to know what now may be available in the way of insurance for marijuana smokers, contact me at info@mclaughlinonline.com or simply call me at 202-293-5566.
This is Normal Show Live.
We're locking up people that take a couple of puffs of marijuana, and the next thing you know, they got 10 years. They've got mandatory sentences, and these judges just say, they throw up their hands and say, there's nothing we can do, there's mandatory sentences. We've got to take a look at what we're considering crimes.
When the Reverend Pat Robertson from television's The 700 Club,
criminalizing marijuana, criminalizing the possession of a few ounces of pot and that kind of thing, I mean, it's just...
makes more sense on the marijuana issue than the president, the Congress, and the Supreme Court.
It's costing us a fortune, and it's ruining young people. The young people go into prisons, they come out, they go in as youths, and they come out as hardened criminals, and it's not a good thing.
You know we're winning.
You want answers?
I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore!
You want answers?
You have offended my family?
I think I'm entitled.
You want answers?
I want the truth!
And you have offended a Shaolin temple.
You can't handle the truth!
Surely you can't be serious.
I am serious. And don't call me Shirley.
Hoo-ah!
Radical rant.
Oh, boy, things are not looking so good in Big Sky Country. SB 423, dubbed Repeal Light by Montana Patients and Families United, is going to become law without the governor's signature. Governor Brian Schweitzer did try to amend it to allow providers to care for 25 patients and to be reimbursed for their work, but the legislature said no go, we're going to restrict this very severely. and the governor decided he couldn't veto it. He couldn't just let nothing happen. He had to somehow restrict what was going on in Montana. So SB 423 will become law without his signature. Now, in the Wall Street Journal, they referred to this as the Wild Wild West getting tamer. The Wild Wild West getting tamer. But actually what's happening is about 28,000 people are going to become criminals on July 1st. And the businesses that used to serve them in an open and regulated manner, they're going to become illegal clandestine operations that have no control and return no benefit to the state. Sounds more like Wild Wild West to me that way than the system we have now where people are registering, getting a card, consulting with a doctor, going to a cannabis store that's regulated and tested and so forth. Yeah, let's shove it all back underground. That's how we'll get control of it. Let me get to you these changes that are going to be taking place on July 1st, 2011 in Montana. This is language from the bill. Severe chronic pain that is persistent pain of severe intensity that significantly interferes with daily activities as documented by the patient's treating physician. This is the qualifying condition for pain. And, in order to qualify for pain, objective proof of the etiology of the pain, including relevant and necessary diagnostic tests that may include but are not limited to the results of an X-ray, computerized tomography scan, or magnetic resonance imaging, or confirmation of that diagnosis from a second physician who is independent of the treating physician and who conducts a physical examination. So, let me translate that for you. If you're a pain patient, now you got to go see your primary care physician to verify that your pain is severe and persistent. Then you got to get an MRI or a CAT scan to prove it. Or you can go to a second doctor to verify everything the first doctor verified. Now, don't worry if you can't afford two separate doctor visits and specialized scanning every year. And don't worry about your health insurance, you know, if you're lucky to have it, that it probably won't cover those scans and it probably won't cover the doctor's second opinion. Because even in that case, I'm sure your doctor will be happy to write you a prescription for Vicodin, Percocet, Darvocet, or some other addictive toxic opioid painkiller with horrendous side effects. Because that'll be far easier for him than recommending you try safe, effective, non-toxic cannabis. Here's another part of the law that's changed with respect to minors. The department shall issue registry identification cards to a minor if the minor's custodial parent or legal guardian with responsibility for healthcare decisions agrees that the minor will use only marijuana-infused products and will not smoke marijuana, undergoes a name-based, undergoes and submits fingerprints to facilitate a background check by the Department of Justice and Federal Bureau of Investigation, FBI fingerprinting, and the parent or legal guardian shall pay the costs of that background check. And the application for a registry identification card for a minor must be accompanied by the written certification and accompanying statements required pursuant to Section 7 from a second physician in addition to the minor's treating physician or referral physician. Let me translate that for you from bureaucraties. You can get medical marijuana to help your kid deal with the intense nausea he suffers when you take him in for chemotherapy. However, you've got to have a second opinion from another doctor. And when your violently heaving child isn't allowed to inhale his cannabis for immediate relief, he has to try to eat it in a pill, tincture, or edible form without immediately puking it back up, and then he's got to wait 45 minutes for it to take effect. Now, if that's too much trouble or expense for your kid, I'm sure your first doctor will have all manner of pharmaceutical remedies that will provide little relief and have many side effects, and it won't even take a doctor's second opinion to get them. Here's another part about the marijuana-infused products providers, actually any providers here, a provider being someone, a caregiver, someone who gives cannabis, or a marijuana-infused products provider, which is a new definition of people who make edibles, tinctures, and so on. These providers may assist a maximum of 3 registered cardholders. 3. A provider or marijuana-infused products provider may not accept anything of value, including monetary remuneration for any services or products provided to a registered cardholder, and may not buy or sell mature marijuana plants, seedlings, cuttings, clones, usable marijuana, or marijuana-infused products. Translation? No more dispensaries. If you need a cannabis as your medicine, you got to grow it yourself. Where do you get the seed or clone to grow your own cannabis? Who knows? By a provider donating it to you for free out of the goodness of his heart. But only if he's not already helping 3 patients. Now, if you are lucky enough to find a provider who can make you one of his 3 patients, he can give you medicine again for free You can't even reimburse him for expenses of light, soil, water, and nutrients like we can in Oregon. Can't even reimburse expenses. You can only cover the cost of his medical marijuana card. So, if that's too much trouble or expense, don't worry about it. There's going to be plenty of cannabis seeds, plants, and medicine for sale in your local park or high school parking lot or back alley or street corner or some dude's house. Now, you won't have a whole lot of choice of strains or preparations or potency, and you'll have no idea whether it's been properly flushed or was grown with pesticides and fungicides or even if it weighs accurately. But, you know, if you wanted consistency, testing, and choice, you'd take one of those mini pharmaceuticals your doctor offers, right? Here's another part that's changed in the new Montana SB 423. Written certification. This is about the recommendation letters. The written certification provided by a physician must be made on a form prescribed by the department and signed and dated by the physician. The written certification must confirm that the physician is the person's treating physician and that the person has been under the physician's ongoing medical care as part of a bona fide professional relationship with the person. Translation? Your regular doctor, not some guy in an Airstream trailer in a hotel room or via Skype, must recommend your medical marijuana. Your primary doctor, your regular doctor. Your doctor isn't allowed to sign because he works for the VA or a major healthcare company or a major HMO or a professional clinic or a university hospital, or he subscribes to insurance that doesn't allow him to recommend. Or maybe he just doesn't want to have to go through the stigma and all the hassles involved with being a pot doc in Montana. Well, don't worry. He's got all sorts of great pharmaceuticals for you to try. Here's another section with respect to healthcare facilities. This is really interesting. Healthcare facility procedures for patients with medical marijuana for use. Except for hospices and residential care facilities that allow the use of marijuana as provided in Section 11, a healthcare facility shall take the following measures when a patient who is a registered cardholder has marijuana in the patient's possession upon admission to the healthcare facility. Must require that the patient removes the marijuana from the premises before the patient is admitted, if the patient is able to do so. If a patient is unable to remove the marijuana or the healthcare facility is unable to contact an individual as, you know, a caregiver, the facility shall contact local law enforcement that has jurisdiction in the area where the facility is located. Translation, if you're unconscious and you need emergency care and the ambulance takes you to a hospital that doesn't allow for medical marijuana, that is most hospitals, the cops will be called to come and take and destroy your medicine before you're allowed to be admitted to the ICU. Don't worry, though. I mean, since your provider's giving you medicine for free now, it's really no big deal, right? Oh, my goodness. Here's another part that's been added. A local government may adopt an ordinance or resolution prohibiting providers and marijuana-infused products providers from operating as a storefront business, which seems kind of unnecessary since the providers may only serve 3 patients and can't accept any money for anything but their registration card. But just to be sure, nobody dares to put up a pot leaf sign on Main Street, I guess. Here's another section that's been added. Inspection procedures. Each provider and marijuana-infused products provider shall keep a complete set of records necessary to show all transactions with registered cardholders. The records must be open for inspection by the department and state or local law enforcement agencies at any time during normal business hours. A provider or marijuana-infused products provider shall maintain records showing the names and registry identification numbers of registered cardholders to whom mature plants, seedlings, usable marijuana, or marijuana-infused products were transferred and the quantities transferred to each cardholder. So not only does your caregiver or grower have to give you all this stuff for free, he's got to keep track of your name and how much he gave you and what day he gave it to you. And the state and local cops can show up at any time they like, and you've got to give them this prosecutor's wet dream of organized evidence proving a federal criminal conspiracy in drug manufacture and trafficking. Now, don't worry that having to keep explicit records of all their deals is going to deter these providers from helping patients, you know, any more than having to do it for free. All you're going to have to do is just get onto Craigslist, get onto Facebook, or go to your local alternative paper in the classifieds, and I'm sure you'll find plenty of these altruistic growers willing to grow for free for you and keep all these records of their federal conspiracy. Oh, wait. Here's Section 20 here. Advertising prohibited. Persons with valid registry identification cards may not advertise marijuana or marijuana-related products in any medium, including electronic media. never mind. I guess you'll just have to meet these strangers on your own in your own neighborhoods. A couple more things here in this. They're going to create a hotline, a new hotline for complaints. So your neighbor who doesn't like the smell of pot now has a hotline to call and complain. And when they get these complaints, law enforcement may go to your door and start asking questions. And finally, they eliminated this telemedicine thing. You can't use your telemedicine license to use Skype to give people their medical marijuana recommendations. Now, you can use telemedicine to verify x-rays, to prescribe all manner of opioid painkillers, and just about any other medical procedure that might be going on, but not medical marijuana. By God, no Skype for the medical marijuana. That's your SB 423. You want to take a look at it? Check the blog at stash.normal.org. It's all written right up there.
This is Normal Show Live, the voice of the marijuana nation.
I'm Radical Russ for Calico the Intern and Cannabis Carrie, wishing Ganja John get well soon, Ganja Wife get well soon. And until next time, take care of each other, tokers.